This is Get Lit with Literature, and this is Monk. There's more at the website, allbook-books.com, and you can check out my Substack page. So I was at the Tiny Raccoon, a used bookstore that sells some new books. It just had its first anniversary in Sayville, and guy who owns it has a nice wide collection, and I just happened to see this book, The Art of the Novel, by Milan Kundera, a famous novelist who I have not read. It's translated from the French by Linda Asher, Franco-Czech novelist and critic. And this is from Harper Perennial 1986. So I just happened to see some quote I liked on the first and second page, and although I'm not writing a novel, I'm working on a long short story with a bunch of characters that I don't know yet if it's going to qualify as a novella, but I figured, hey, just pick it up and it'll be interesting. So I'm going to read a bunch of the quotes, comment a little bit. The rise of the sciences propelled man into the tunnels of the specialized disciplines. The more he advanced in knowledge, the less clearly could he see either the world as a whole or his own self. And he plunged further into what Husserl's pupil Heidegger called, in a beautiful and almost magical phrase, the forgetting of being. The forgetting of being. That clearly reminds me of John Trudell speaking about, as he explains, human being, that the being is the essence and the eternal essence, or whatever, that's my words for it, the spirit of a human, and the human is out there doing stuff. So the forgetting of being as well, there's the forgetting of the sunlight as the sun as a being, the plants as beings, the trees as beings, and on and on. And Kundera has a great scope of novels, so he quotes a lot of novels, and he quotes the history of the novels and how it's morphed, and makes me want to read Cervantes's Don Quixote. So he gives a lot of explanation about what the novel is and what it can do and what it does and all that. It made me also think that the novel, in the grand scope of things, is sort of like a, I don't know, it seems like a form of story, it is a form of storytelling, but it almost seems like a man fixated on his own trying to figure stuff out, because before the novel, various cultures and indigenous cultures have their stories and origin stories and stories about how to get along. So the novel's wonderful, but it sort of gave me that perspective about the novel, though I haven't read much novels in the past 25 years or so. Thus, the potential of Flaubert's discovery of the quotidian was once fully developed 70 years later in James Joyce's gigantic work. The novel is incompatible with the totalitarian universe. Totalitarian truth excludes relativity, doubt, questioning. It can never accommodate what I would call the spirit of the novel. About a half century ago, the history of the novel came to a halt in the empire of Russian communism. A period of repetition in which the novel keeps duplicating its form, emptied of its spirit. That says a lot about the technology today. Just, you know, endless podcasts, he says ironically, and website posts and all kinds of stuff, but where's the spirit of it? And is it just repeating the same stuff? A whirlpool of reduction. That's interesting to ponder. And here's a great description of mainstream media. Like all of culture, the novel is more and more in the hands of the mass media. As agents of the unification of the planet's history, the media amplify and channel the reduction process. They distribute throughout the world the same simplifications and stereotypes easily acceptable by the greatest number, by everyone, by all mankind, and it doesn't much matter that different political interests appear in the various organs of the media. Behind these surface differences reigns a common spirit. You have only to glance at American or European political weeklies of the left or the right. They all have the same view of life, reflected in the same ordering of the table of contents, under the same headings, in the same journalistic phrasing, the same vocabulary, and the same style, in the same artistic tastes, and in the same ranking of things they deem important or insignificant. This common spirit of the mass media, camouflaged by political diversity, is the spirit of our time, and this spirit seems to me contrary to the spirit of the novel. The novel spirit is the spirit of complexity. Every novel says to the reader, things are not as simple as you think. That is the novel's eternal truth, but it grows steadily harder to hear amid the din of easy, quick answers that come faster than the question and block it off. So that's from 1986. But the spirit of our time is firmly focused on a present that is so expansive and profuse that it shoves the past off our horizon and reduces time to the present moment only. Within this system, the novel is no longer a work, a thing made to last, connect the past with the future, but one current event among many, a gesture with no tomorrow. I made a note of that phrase, that possible short story title or... I like that phrase, a gesture with no tomorrow. That's part one. Then he has an interview with somebody about the dialogue on the art of the novel. How much is realistic? How much is meditative interrogation? The interior monologue, that's where Joyce's Ulysses excelled in the interior monologue. And Kundera says, meditative interrogative meditation is the basis on which all my novels are constructed. Because making a character, quote, alive, end quote, means getting to the bottom of his existential problem, which in turn means getting to the bottom of some situations, some motifs, even some words that shape him, nothing more. And that's a really helpful, I think, for even actors in plays or anybody writing with characters, getting to the bottom of his or her existential problem. The novel's sole raison d'etre is to say what only the novel can say. To say what only the novel can say. And another fascinating phrase. It's some time now since the river, the nightingale, the paths through the fields have disappeared from man's mind. Again, quite prescient with the onslaught of the technology distraction age. Talking about Kafka. And talks about the bureaucratic institution and the army administration mentality. Describes two different approaches to a war. We have lived in the space between the absolute of the serious and the absolute of the non-serious. Reminds me of what I said about the Wodehouse last week about writing totally going for it seriously or a total send-up. And here's a very insightful thing I found. Priest's robes were the mark of superterrestrial power, whereas the officer's uniform, the magistrate's gown, represented the profane. As the magical influence of the church gradually faded, the uniform replaced the sacerdotal habit and rose to the level of the absolute. I find that very fascinating because the influence of the church as authority figure has been replaced by go where you go with that, with uniform, but, you know, put somebody with a white lab coat and a clipboard and call them an expert, and, you know, you've just swayed millions or billions of people. So the type of uniform that man wears is another interesting thing he's pointing out there. Later on, he says, the profane uniform took the place of the priest's habit. And in Brock, I guess, a writer I don't know, B-R-O-C-H, in Brock's mind, the modern era is the bridge that leads from the reign of irrational faith to the reign of the irrational in a world without faith. Found that insightful too. Seems referring to religion as irrational faith to the reign of the irrational in a world without faith. So some of these are like Zen koans. What is action? The eternal question of the novel, its constructive question, so to speak. How is a decision born? How is it transformed into an act? And how do acts connect to make an adventure? An adventure is a luminously causal chain of acts. Luminously causal chain of acts. So these are, even if you don't, as a writer, if you're working on a novel or a play and you don't take a course in that, these little gems, I think, are very helpful for then you can sit with those and think about them and really build a structure for your story or your novel or whatever by just pondering some of these. As he gets into mentioning different writers and the characters' motivations, are they rational, are they irrational, are they based on madness? Another very insightful thing, he talks about symbols and pointing out that it is to symbols they are reacting when they believe they are acting upon reality. We need only examine our own lives to see how much this irrational system, far more than any reasoned thought, directs our attitudes. Now that got me to think of, you know, various symbols. Brock shows us that is the system of confusions, spelled with a hyphen, confusions, the system of symbolic thought that underlies all behavior, individual as well as collective. So what he's getting at, I think, is, say, we have certain symbols, whether it's the flag or this, you know, this, that, or the other, that these symbols, you know, product, brand, logos and stuff, these symbols then become to rule our lives in many ways unless we are conscious otherwise. So he talks about modernity, freedom, adventure, and all, how these things can be deceptive, you know, like a car is a symbol of freedom. You can get in it and go anywhere you want. Symbol of modernity, freedom, adventure. There's tons of novels. That's my one qualm with Kerouac's On the Road, is that it promotes a kind of get in the car and go and you're free and there's enlightenment. But what of the land and the respect? In that case, it's like the American novel of the American, you know, car travel adventure. But at what expense to the original peoples of the land and the respect for the natural world? Maybe the novel gets into that, I don't remember. But especially the respect for the original native nations. And I'll wrap it up about as far as I've gotten in the book so far, about 60, 70 pages. He talks about, let's see, modernism. For in the second half of this century, we must reckon with the modernism of fixed rules. The modernism of the university, establishment modernism, so to speak. So I like that the establishment modernism. It's like these things, it's sort of like woke. I think he's almost talking about woke. These things that are seem modern and hip, but it's of the establishment. It's coming from, say, the university and the schooling. But, you know, what of the actual way of living and lifestyle? So that'll do for this edition of Get Lit with Literature. And sometimes I think as a writer, you can spontaneously find a book that just helps you with whatever you're doing and read a bit. So anyway, thank you for listening and be well.